This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight. This is a special pre-recorded program while VOA headquarters resolves some technical issues. I'm your host, Hayes Wuhib in Washington. Coming up,
most of the people in urban areas, you know, they may have taps in their homes, but when they open the taps, water doesn't come out. We have a big challenge in terms of access to water. So even when you tell people that you have to wash your hands with running water and soap, where do they get the water?
That was Itai Rusiki, director of the Community Working Group on Health in Zimbabwe on good hygiene to fight the coronavirus. Details coming up. Also, Egyptian Prime Minister announces the start of curfew to fight coronavirus in the country. And companies that offer goods online in South Africa are reporting increased sales. We'll have these stories and more next on this special VOA Africa program. Our top story, Zimbabwean workers in essential service have put down their tools because of safety concerns as the global pandemic of COVID-19 reaches the country. Adi Gando gives us more on the story.
On Tuesday, the Zimbabwe Revenue and Allied Workers Trade Union, ZIMRATU, served notice of strike action to protest what the union says is the occupational risk of exposure to the COVID-19 at the Robert Mugabe International Airport. The union says its members were exposed when a victim of the disease passed through the airport and was served by union members who work for the Zimbabwe Revenue Authority, ZIMRA. The patient, prominent journalist Zororo Makamba, later died. The union says there has been no testing or quarantining of the workers following the discovery of Makamba's COVID-19 infection status. The union says there is a lack of protective measures at the airport that comply with the World Health Organization's protocols. Love Mongwarati is the union's secretary general.
The employer is supposed to observe a World Health Organization guidelines in as far as how to deal with workers who are in touch with various clients, in this case, of course, coming in from various destinations. We have noted that the employer is not doing enough, in our view. We are saying we have tried, we have written several times to the employer, maybe 3 weeks ago also, asking the employer to take preventive measures, but we did not see anything really.
Among its demands, the union wants the government to supply protective masks and gloves for workers, sanitizers, workplace disinfection, order enforced social distancing, and ease workplace congestion. The union says the strike is meant to draw attention to the worker situation. It may be done in the country's other entry points, which may disrupt the flow of essential goods into the country.
We are hoping that what we have done so far is going to cause the employer to take us seriously and act accordingly. That is maybe putting in place such facilities like allowing maybe people to rotate. Maybe some come to work today, some come tomorrow. Try and make sure we decongest the workstations, and also maybe procedures to do with the quarantining of those workers who may have been exposed. And also, as a trade union, we are doing this as representatives of workers who, in this case, are seriously exposed in our view, and we are seeing little action from the employer.
There are more than 2,400 confirmed cases on the African continent, but only a few in Zimbabwe. And the National Minister of Health says it has the coronavirus situation under control. However, neighboring South Africa has more than 700 cases, raising fears it can spread across the border. The Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Union has called on the Zimbabwean government to lock down the country, arguing current measures to discourage large gatherings are not enough to keep the spread of the pandemic. Peter Mtasa is the president of the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Union and says a lockdown is the only logical thing to do under the circumstances.
Again, all our workers have no protection. They don't have protective clothing from the frontline workers in the health sector. They don't have sufficient protective clothing. Then we can't have the whole economy operational because we can't make protect we can't provide protection to the whole workforce.
Mutasa says the ZCTU wants the government to allow only essential services to operate so that scant resources can be made available to those who get sick. The Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association has also gone on strike to protest inadequate facilities to fight COVID-19 in the country's medical facilities. Efforts to get comment from both the permanent secretary and spokesperson for the health ministry yielded no result as their phones were not answered. Mutasa says union members have run out of options to protect themselves.
But now that we seemingly are on our own, the citizens, the workers are on their own, we are now left with no choice than to call workers to stay home and then ask government to immediately come up with plans for maintaining essential services. This is said, but we are lacking leadership currently.
He says a lockdown is much better than letting the country's weak and poorly supplied healthcare system be overwhelmed. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
While personal hygiene emphasized as a key factor in keeping the coronavirus at bay, some Zimbabweans fear that water shortages may jeopardize their fight to stay healthy. Antiquated pumping systems that cannot meet increasing demand, lack of capital to upgrade the systems, and cyclic droughts all play a role. Reporter Kudzai Musengi reports.
Many people across the globe wash their hands with running water and soap without thinking much about it. But in the face of the coronavirus, health experts emphasize that this mundane act, along with other personal hygiene measures, can help prevent the spread of the pandemic. Human rights activist Nozi Porutsate is a resident of Gweru, Zimbabwe's third biggest city. She says the city has been experiencing persistent water shortages, with some residents going for up to 2 weeks with their taps dry.
Water is one of the key resources that is needed to maintain that hygiene. And in a city such as Gweru, our supply of water is not as steady as it should be, or normal as it should be. So it's going to be a very big problem to maintain that basic hygiene.
Bulawayo, the country's second biggest city, faces similar issues. In the capital, Harare, many residents have no access to running water, mainly as a result of increasing demand from the growing population. Itai Rusike is the director of the Community Working Group on Health that advocates for the improvement of the public health system. He says the water shortages in Zimbabwe's urban areas are a threat to public health.
Most of the people in urban areas, you know, they may have taps in their homes, but when they open the taps, water doesn't come out. We have a big challenge in terms of access to water. So even when you tell people that you have to wash your hands with running water and soap, where do they get the water? They know that the water is not available.
Gweru Mayor Josiah Makombe is also the president of the Urban Councils Association of Zimbabwe, UCAS, which brings together councils from all urban areas. He admits that local authorities across the country are finding it difficult to supply enough clean water, but says councils should have contingency measures. He says he believes government will help.
These local authorities, we'll try our best to make sure that our people are not infected because of the challenge of water that we are facing. Since the government has now declared it as a state of emergency, I'm sure there is going to be some funds that are going to be channeled to local authorities to make sure that the issue of water is addressed once and for all.
VOA tried to reach local government minister July Moyo for comment, but his mobile phone went unanswered. Deputy Minister Marian Chombo said government is prioritizing upgrades to water and sewer systems by providing funding under government's program to devolve power to the provinces. Dr. Henry Madzorera, Health Secretary for the Opposition Movement for Democratic Change, says government should help provide sanitizers and other products.
Without water, we're going to have a huge problem. We can use sanitizers, yes, we urge people to use and keep sanitizers for their hands, but these sanitizers are not easy to come by. And so we urge even our government to make sure that we have sanitizers distributed throughout the nation, like we did during the cholera outbreak. And we procured these water treatment chemicals. This time we need hand sanitizers. Please, government, help us to get hand sanitizers.
In Zimbabwe, this may be somewhat of a luxury for many. Reporting for VOA from Mulawayo, this is Kudzanai Musengi.
Egyptian Prime Minister Mustafa Madbouly says a curfew from 7 p.m. to 6 a.m. takes effect today, during which all public and private transportation is suspended to help fight the coronavirus. Schools and universities will remain closed until mid-April. President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi says the curfew will be strictly enforced. Like other countries, Egypt has also taken steps to curtail the impact of COVID-19 on the economy, including a surprise 3% cut in interest rates and an injection of 20 billion Egyptian pounds to support the stock market. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi discussed the mobs with Saeed Sadiq, professor of political sociology at the American University in Cairo.
The government had a gradual approach to what was happening. The reaction was according to new information. Now, internationally, everybody wants to level the curve. They don't want this to spread. And we also began to see regional countries posing curfew because that would also help in stopping the spread of the virus. And the media and the people were pushing the government to take an action and emulate other countries. And so in the end, the Egyptian government felt that this is the best time. And also, we are aware that maybe this week and next week will be the hardest. If somebody is really hit with it in Egypt, we will have a big outbreak. And so they wanted to make sure that this is not spreading everywhere. And that's why they decided that this is the time to impose the curfew. And also, you take into consideration, this the Egyptian economy depends on a lot of foreign interaction. And now this has stopped. We have the airports closing. We don't have tourism. All touristic sites are closed. So there was no reason not to have a real lockdown and curfew, and also to give the people the idea that we are in a serious situation, because some people were not taking what is happening seriously. So they wanted a cold shower, and that was the cold shower.
So can you explain why the Egyptians were not serious about keeping social distance since the beginning of the virus outbreak?
There are several reasons. One is that many Egyptians have this social etiquette of hugging, kissing, handshaking whenever they meet anybody. And so such customs do not die quickly or easily. Secondly, people felt that the corona is like the usual flu, and so why should be so worried about it? Also, yeah. Egyptians have this self-image. Many countries have this self-image that they are strong and can stand any virus or any threat compared to other societies. Also, it was not clear how dangerous was this pandemic when it erupted. Egyptian media were playing it down. Every official statements were also not firm about the danger. In fact, the head of the Egyptian Health Committee in the parliament played it down and said that even the WHO has not declared it a pandemic. Also, this feeling that the geographic stats of the virus showed that it is very common and spreading in Asia and Europe and North America, but less in Africa. So that was also a factor. And there was also this concern about the economic consequences, but now they began to feel that they have to be serious about it.
Like other countries, Egypt has also taken steps to curtail the impact of coronavirus on the economy, including a surprising 3% cut in interest rates and an injection of about 20 billion Egyptian pounds to support the stock market. How about supporting the non-salary workers who earn their income on a daily basis?
The size of the informal labor in the Egyptian market is huge. It's between 40 to 50%, so it's a huge thing. The government alone cannot do it. There has to be also involvement of the private sector. So some of the private sector companies began to help their workers and seasonal workers and for 3 to 6 months in advance. The government took some policies like suspending taxes, interest rate on loans that were taking earlier. You don't have to pay it for the next 6 months. There was also a phone line, hotline by the Ministry of Manpower. household, those unregistered workers would phone and register and will take a kind of subsidy and assistance. NGOs are also active in helping people. The tourism sector, which employs between 4.5 million to 5 million employees, and if you multiply that by four, the average size of the family, we're talking about 20 million people. They have an emergency fund for the Ministry of Tourism and the Chamber of Egyptian Hotels, and they have decided to cash the salaries of employees and those who are serving temporarily for the next 6 months until this is resolved.
That was Saeed Sadiq, professor of political sociology at the American University in Cairo, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shenawi. You were listening to a special recorded program on VOA Africa. I'm your host, Yehiz Wuhib. Uganda's government and the UN have agreed to suspend refugee arrivals in the country to help stem the spread of COVID-19. Uganda, one of the largest refugee host countries, has also restricted the movement of refugees within their settlement. The border closure has left hundreds of South Sudanese stranded on the Uganda side of the Eligu crossing as they try to rejoin their families. Uganda police say they deported dozens of South Sudanese trying to sneak into Uganda through unofficial crossing points. Onen Walter Solomon reports for VOA from Elgu in Uganda's Amuru district.
Most of the stranded travelers are trying to reunite with their families in Uganda or South Sudan. 38-year-old Jennifer Nimungu, a mother of seven, says she left her three-month-old baby with her husband in Nimule and crossed into Uganda on Monday to receive food rations for her children at the Pagirinya refugee settlement camp in Ajumani district. Nimungu says when she returned that night, Ugandan authorities in Elegu closed the border with South Sudan. Nimungu pleaded with authorities to let her get back to South Sudan to breastfeed baby to no avail. Speaking in her local Aluru language, Nimungu says on Tuesday, some people at the Ugandan border asked her to pay money to let her cross into South Sudan.
My breasts are engorging, painful, and dripping. On Tuesday, I found Okello, who is responsible here, but he told me it was too late for me to cross to South Sudan.
A driver who prefers to be identified only as Issa for fear of possible reprisals from authorities says some Ugandan authorities at the border allow certain cars and people to cross into South Sudan.
Authorities are allowing her cars to cross on corruption. The ways they are agreeing with them are not officials to allow numberless cars to exit to South Sudan. Even Diso is aware of that. They are well connected.
Diso in Uganda stands for District Internal Security Officer. Several calls to authorities at Elegu for comment went unanswered. 30-year-old Jacob Yak, a South Sudanese who is trying to return to South Sudan from Uganda, says he does not understand why he cannot return home.
For us, we are leaving the country. We are leaving Uganda. So we don't pose any threat to the country. So they should just allow us to exit, then bar people from coming in. So the border should be open for those who are leaving, then should be closed for those who are coming in.
Patrick Jimmy Okema, police spokesman for Uganda's northern region, told South Sudan in Focus that Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni's directive to close borders as a measure to control the spread of COVID-19 is for the benefit of the public and cannot be compromised.
It is not an individual problem. We are looking at the general issue. If I have an issue as me, whom you are speaking to, it is my own issue, but my issue should not affect the entire public. If I have my family across, let the family remain there.
Some passengers who agreed to speak off the record said both desperate Ugandans and South Sudanese have resorted to crossing the border through the bush. Amuru district authorities have told reporters in northern Uganda that at least 55,000 Sudanese nationals who crossed the borders to Uganda via the bush were deported. Okema says police officers must ensure that the public adheres to the presidential directive to keep the border closed for at least 1 month to fight the spread of coronavirus. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Amuru District, northern Uganda.
Companies that offer goods online in South Africa are reporting increased sales as the nation prepares for a lockdown at midnight tonight to slow the spread of COVID-19. The country is the most technologically advanced in Africa, and internet shopping has been available here for more than two decades. But buying online has up until now proved popular among only a small segment of the population of around 60 million. From Johannesburg, correspondent Darren Taylor reports that the coronavirus pandemic is changing this.
Shopping online is as easy as making Black Twitter angry.
Just download the app, find the thingy you want, and check out.
Just one of the many ads encouraging people in South Africa to shop online in the wake of COVID-19. Business experts estimate that online sales account for just 2% of the retail market in the country at the moment. But Dion Chang, the founder of the Flux Trends firm, which predicts and analyzes trends in South Africa, says this figure is misleading.
The consumer market technically is about your 12 to 15% of taxpayers. So firstly, it's the 2% of that 12% and not the 2% of the 100%. So, you know, relatively to the size of economies, we're not doing too bad.
Nevertheless, says Chang, South Africans have habits that have slowed the uptake of e-commerce.
We follow traditionally very, very much American mall culture.
He adds that while the digitalization of business is obliterating this culture around the world, this hasn't been so in South Africa.
Because we're in a divided economy, you've got people who will still go to a shopping mall for entertainment and for socializing and all of that.
Chang says the lockdown will end these pursuits for the time being and likely transform South African buyer behavior forever.
With everybody in isolation, you're just going to get a huge spike in people online, browsing, doing this, whatever.
So far, he says, South Africans are preparing for a long time stuck at home by buying entertainment online.
Slightly big ticket numbers, like a TV or something like that. So the whole mentality is if we're going to be holed up, we might as well kind of just do it with a bit of comfort and luxury. And a lot more subscriptions to online streaming services like your Netflix or your Spotify's or podcasts and stuff like that, besides toilet paper, of course.
But Chang says while citizens are ripe for change, most businesses in the country are not.
With just the complete panic buying that we've had, a lot of these online stores are not coping with capacity. A friend of mine who just came back from overseas was quarantined, so she spent like an hour doing a Woolworths shop, only to be told at checkout that, well, okay, we'll deliver in a week's time.
Chang says the coronavirus crisis should force South Africa's retailers to improve their e-commerce, because if they don't, they're going to lose plenty of business. But the analyst adds that even a big increase in online purchases may not be enough to save certain retail categories, such as clothing, from financial catastrophe.
We're going into lockdown just when all of these stores are going to bring out all of their winter stuff. If people are in further lockdown, that means nobody's going to buy that winter stock, which means it just sits dead.
In times of big crises, says Chang, it's always the smaller enterprises that suffer the most. Yet, even for them, he sees hope if they're able to rapidly improve their websites and their capability to deliver directly to homes. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this special VOA Africa program. I'm Yeyis Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And thank you again for tuning in to this recorded program while VOA resolves its technical issues. Thanks for choosing the Voice of America.